Obviously not.
504 in the fast lane. Time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. And Big Sizz is here. Ronge is here. Randy is here. And after Cody Parkey broke the hearts of Bears fans last year, the city of Chicago has become desperate to find a legitimate kicker. In January, Goose Island Brewery had an event where they offered free beer for a year for anyone who could hit a 43-yard field goal, which is the distance that Parkey missed from. But the Bears may have found their guy last night.
Coach Nagy has made it a point to put as much pressure on these kickers as possible.
From 43, Elliott Fry. Give him a standing ovation for a preseason field goal.
I'll tell you what, it's important. It's continued from Bourbon A to Chicago, the excitement for the Bears kicker in this competition.
That's a preseason game.
Yeah.
That's how excited they are that a guy made a field goal.
Fantastic.
Oh, my gosh. And earlier in that game, I don't know if you saw this, but Eddie Pinheiro hit, he didn't hit the upright, but he missed left on a 48-yarder, and he got booed in a preseason game. That's where the Bears are right now in their kicker search. They're excited somebody finally hit a 43-yarder, even if it didn't count.
Ronge, Dante Bichette's son, Bo, plays for the Toronto Blue Jays. He's played 11 games. He's doubled in the last nine, setting not only the rookie record, the all-time major league record for consecutive games with a double. Take it or leave it, Bo Bichette has another major league game in his career where he doesn't have a double.
I'm going to take it. It's just the law of averages here. At some point, he's going to...
You're negative. Goose Gossage, you know what he'd say about you?
What's that?
You're a negative blanker blanker. Take that to the fat man.
Yeah, I'll take it to the fat man right now. I think it's, here's the thing. It's very hard. I don't know if you know this or not. It's almost impossible, but it is at minimum really difficult to hit a double every day.
Clearly it's not for him.
Now, he might get a single at least every day. I think that's totally doable.
He's got more doubles than singles.
I know. I'm going to leave it, though.
All right.
My guess is Bo Bichette does not have a hit every single day for the rest of his career. If he did, I bet that would be a record.
Take it or leave it. At some point during the next 2 years, the Blue Jays will field a lineup of former major leaguers' sons.
They're already doing it, so take it. That is, they're going to trade for Fernando Tatis Jr.
Yeah, get him.
That's coming up next. Do they have Delino DeShields Jr.?
No, but they can get him.
Yeah, let's pick him up too while we're at it. So we did just play for you the Elliott Fry 43-yard field goal for the Bears in a preseason game in which he got a standing ovation. This happened in the second quarter of the game last night between the Bears and the Panthers, and Carolina coach Ron Rivera called a timeout right before that kick to ice Elliott Fry, again, in a preseason game. He was asked after the fact if he did that on purpose, and his response was, yes, I did it on purpose. The Bears are trying to find a kicker, and I was helping them out to see if he could handle the pressure of kicking after being iced, which did not work for Cody Parkey because he was unable to overcome that in the playoff game. Take it or leave it, Ron Rivera is a swell guy.
I'll take it. Former Bear, he wants the Bears to succeed.
That's right. He was their defensive coach for a long time.
Right. So, yeah, I totally get that.
Chico.
Big Sizz, what do you got for us?
Take it or leave it, the Cardinals score more than 9 runs in this series against the Pirates.
Ooh, I'm going to leave it.
3 games.
Yeah.
3 runs per game. It's going to be right at 9.
All right.
You said more than 9?
It just said, yeah, more than 9.
Yep. Yeah, I'm going to leave it because it's going to be right at 9.
Take it or leave it. The Cardinals need to send Waka and Carlos to the chiropractor and then Marp, DeYoung, Bader, and Goldie to Dr. Brenton. All fixed, sunshine and lollipops.
Take it.
Does Goldie need to go to the... He's fine.
Yeah, but you can never have eyes that are too good.
That's true. Can you have eyes that are too sharp, that you see so clearly that it hurts? I don't think that's possible.
I don't think you can.
No. But yeah, we'll
need to put up a poll. Can you have eyes that are too good?
Twitter poll. I'd like to hear that.
Take it or leave it. I need a tall, frosty beer tonight.
Take it.
Take it.
Yes, you do, sir. or ma'am. It's going to make everything okay.
You going to see the former Oakland A's? Was he a ball boy?
MC Hammer?
Yeah. Hammer time.
I think he was a bat boy. I think you're right.
Yeah. And Mrs. Fields worked there, too. Her cookies were a product of her working for the Oakland Athletics.
Now, that I did not know.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Hmm?
Wow.
I don't know if she'll be at the concert tonight.
She dead?
No.
Dead or alive, Mrs. Fields?
Totally alive. Yeah, she's not that old. She's probably about Hammer's age.
Take it or leave it, Hammer's still broke.
Leave it.
Yeah, I'll leave it.
Take it or leave it, Hammer will be wearing those pants tonight.
Take it. How can you be MC Hammer and have a concert and not put those on at some point?
Have to wear those, yes. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Can't touch this. Yeah. I was watching the video of the 1991 Falcons who had MC Hammer as their mascot. And so Jerry Glanville was being a smart aleck on the sidelines, and the Redskins thought they were being disrespected, and the Redskins were one of the best teams in the history of the league, and they just smoked them. It was great. And they've got video of Hammer walking off the field after the third quarter. It's pretty funny.
You know, Hammer, from my understanding, went broke because he decided to give everybody that he ever knew a job once he got famous.
That's very nice.
And he was paying all of his friends to do nothing.
Need a friend like that.
I had heard stories of him being on stage performing, and there were like 100 random people just up there doing nothing. Hmm. Yeah, that's how you lose your money.
Yeah, it is. So owner Charlie Finley of the A's spotted a young Stanley Burrell dancing with his friends outside the stadium one day, and impressed with Burrell's splits, he called him over and asked the youth if anyone had ever told him he looked like Hank Aaron, a.k.a. Hammer and Hank.
Mm-hmm.
Burrell responded, "No, sir, but thank you." And Finley invited Burrell, henceforth known as Hammer, to watch the game with him, handed him a job as a clubhouse attendant, and MC Hammer found positions for his brothers, too. And by the time he was 16, he was a vice president of a team that at that point had just 6 front office employees. So Hammer, at 16, was in an MLB front office.
Nice.
At ESPN.com, Adam Schefter writes, quote, "Antonio Brown has told the Oakland Raiders that unless he can wear his old helmet, he will not play football again. Take it or leave it, the helmet AB wants back is a Steelers helmet."
Yeah, I'll take that. I wonder if the league says, if they call his bluff. He says he'll never play again unless he gets his 10-year-old helmet, unless he gets to wear it.
He is so full of crap. You know, I was really on this dude's side, and I was giving him the benefit of the doubt this entire time, but I think he is absolutely full of it. It's a real bummer, man.
Yeah, I'm with you.
The helmet. But he says that it's obstructing his vision.
Right.
Is it not obstructing any other receiver's vision, just his?
Poor fella.
Come on, man.
We did get a text from the 630. It says, "I am an eye doctor. You can't have eyes that are too good, but you can be a pain in the ass trying to achieve it."
Got it.
Number two or number three? Number two. I can't really tell, Doc.
Thanks, Big Sis.
Thank you.
And thanks for your text to the Hot Shot text line, 65780. Hey, do you feel like the Cardinals look deflated? So does our buddy Greg Amzinger. We'll talk about that next on 101 ESPN. That's our friend Greg Amzinger, the lead anchor for MLB Network. And when you're playing against teams like Oakland and the Dodgers, that can make you look deflated. But I get where he's coming from, because, Ron, you've been around Major League clubhouses. I've been around Major League clubhouses. And players pay attention to what other teams are doing and to what their front office is doing. And if you work hard, especially a Cardinal team that was essentially told at the All-Star break, we'll see how they perform from the All-Star break until the trade deadline, and then we'll make our decision as to how we're going to reinforce them. Players did everything that they could do, and then they weren't reinforced. I can see how that would be deflating for a group of athletes.
I know that you're going to hear guys like Miles Michaelis say essentially that, and I believe this is lip service. I don't think he truly believes this, and I think most players in the clubhouse, and again, I probably shouldn't speak for them, but my guess is this, that they did feel a little deflated, that they weren't giving a little bit of help. And he can say things like, well, that means they believe in the core here, and all we have to do is just play our game and we're going to be okay. And I'm paraphrasing what he said, but it was something along those lines. Well, that argument can only go so far, because I'm sure the Houston Astros felt really comfortable with their core as well. But you know what they did? They went and got better. They were already really, really, really good, and they went and got even better at the trade deadline with a couple of acquisitions. So I don't think that all the players in that clubhouse feel that way. At minimum, you might have a couple that feel that way, but at minimum, there's at least a handful that feel like, hey, we did our part. We came out. We played well leading up to the break. We know we're close here and have a real shot. We're in first place right now. Give us some help. Tell us that you really believe in us, and then we can go on a run here if we get those reinforcements. And I think that's how players look at it. They feel like getting a deal done at the deadline is some added reinforcement because we believe in this group. We think you're going to go far. Here's some help to go do it.
And in what is somewhat of an ironic twist, the one guy who has the opportunity to take advantage of the Cardinals not making a deal the most is Michael Wacha. That's the guy that should be really fired up about getting a continued opportunity to perform. And I'm not suggesting that his struggles are related at all to effort, but you would think as a matter of focus, if the guy's at all capable of turning it on, that this would be the point at which he does.
If it's a mental thing, I absolutely agree with you, because basically what they would say to you, forget about the rest of the team. You're thinking of yourself in the moment, and what you hear in the week leading up to the deadline is, I'm the fifth starter now. Okay, they believe in me. So if they believe in me, I'm going to go out there and I'm just going to start shoving bats. And that's not what he did, at least not yet. And I don't have a whole lot of confidence he's going to. I don't think a lot of people do. So I don't know how the rest of the team feels. Like I said earlier, I imagine they don't feel great about what did not happen at the deadline. But if anybody is going to take a positive out of it and run with it, or at least should, he's the guy that should.
If you missed Derek Gould's note the other day, it's striking. The Cardinals making at least a two-city trip, and for the first time since 1960, came home from at least a two-city trip without a win, which is absolutely remarkable.
Amazing.
And even before knowing that statistic, Greg Amsinger was depressed about that loss.
I think that game yesterday against the Dodgers was one of the most back-breaking losses of the season in all of baseball. We've seen a few teams lose that those are crushing losses. I look at it the way the Cardinals conducted business on the day of the trade deadline, the way the Giants conduct business on the day of the trade deadline, and these two teams are deflated, and you see the aftermath of it right now. They're both playing terrible baseball.
And you hope that it gets better against bad teams. But for the Cardinals, the question is, we talk about not being able to hit home runs, but what about being able to manufacture a run?
Where is old-school Cardinal baseball? I get it. We're not going to have guys bunting for hits to lead off games. We're not going to hit and run, double steal. But it's a base-to-base team. They're playing the same brand of baseball as everyone else. And if you're 12th in home runs, guess what? You're probably middle of the pack when it comes to wins and losses. If that is your plan, if that's your offensive strategy, stand around and hope Carpenter, Ozuna, DeYoung, and Goldschmidt hit a homer. That's the offensive strategy. I mean, to me, A, boring baseball. B, you're not reaching your full potential. You got to be more athletic. Athleticism is at its lowest point for this franchise that I've seen in forever.
And, Ronj, I want to point out here that the Cardinals are one of the top stolen base teams in all of baseball, and I believe they're second in all of baseball in stolen base percentage. I'll double check that for you here. They are actually third behind Arizona and the Dodgers. Arizona has 64, has been thrown out 8 times. The Dodgers have only 36 stolen bases. They've been thrown out 8. The Cardinals have 75 stolen bases, second in all of baseball, and they've only been thrown out 18 times, which is somewhat remarkable because you look around. Carpenter, not particularly athletic. DeYoung, Wong is. Goldschmidt isn't the base runner. Well, he's not the runner that we thought that he is. He's a good base runner. Catchers aren't doing anything. And even in the outfield, especially with the departure of Harrison Bader, you don't have a tremendous amount of athleticism out there either. So for the Cardinals to be where they are in stolen bases and hitting and running in baseball, that says a lot for what Mike Schilt has done fundamentally, that they can do it without the athleticism that they've had in the past.
Well, I understand where Greg is coming from. I think the problem is you have to have the personnel that's capable of doing it, and part of being capable of doing it is being on base to do it. You can't steal bases. You can't go first to third. You can't hit and run if you're not getting guys on base. And they've been one of the worst teams in the National League in getting guys on base. And in particular, the last month of the season, they are second to last. Only the Marlins are worse than the Cardinals are in on-base percentage. So none of that stuff does you any good at all. And I know that one of the reasonings for Colton Wong, for example, that Mike Schilt said he liked him batting lower in the order was, we like the stolen base threat down there. Well, you know, I don't know what good that does you if the rest of the lineup isn't there to drive you in. And if you're doing that batting seventh and then the eighth and ninth place hitters are coming up after you, I don't know how that helps very much.
And the big thing, and you've talked about this before, is the home run, because it is a game of home runs now. The only teams with fewer home runs than the Cardinals are the White Sox, terrible, Pittsburgh, terrible, the Giants, terrible offensively, Kansas City, terrible, Detroit, terrible, Miami, terrible. Baltimore has more home runs than the Cardinals do. The Cardinals with 141 homers are 24th in the league, and when you look at the top, home runs equal really good. The top five teams in baseball in home runs are the Twins, the Yankees, the Astros, the Dodgers, and the Brewers. And number six is Atlanta.
Well, one thing I will give them is, and this isn't even a great thing, but it's improved. They've done better in the power department. I like looking at the last month because I think that's sometimes a better predictor of what's going to happen next. So what's going to happen the rest of this month and next month? Though it's not, I mean, it's not fail-safe, but I think the trend has been better, but it's still not great because right now they're eighth in the league in the last month in home runs. They are just in front of Arizona, Milwaukee, San Francisco, and Philly, three home runs better than all four of them. So they, without Paul Goldschmidt going on that tear for a minute, they're still right near the bottom. But he has helped in that department, but he has to keep doing it. Pretty much everything has to be firing on all cylinders for this team to have a good offense.
Cardinals and Pirates tonight at 7 o'clock at the ballpark. And, Ronge, how about this? The Cardinals are scuffling. We're going to see what our buddy Greg Amsinger has to say about that.
Well, that's weird because we just heard from him. So are we going to hear from him again, or?
No, you know what I think we need to hear from?
What's that?
I think we need to hear from the people that are tuned into this show, driving around.
Oh.
If you are willing to text and drive or pull over and text us, we would love to hear from you, because if you have questions heading into the weekend, then we will answer them for you.
Do you know what I think happened?
What do you think happened?
Meetup.
You know, that very well could be.
I think you forgot to change the rundown from yesterday.
That might be the case. I could absolutely see that.
Because if you look at the top of the sheet here, it says Greg Amsinger is on today.
Uh-huh.
And so is Alex Ferrario.
Who's
this is the same rundown from 3 days
it's
ago.
It's just changed.
Yeah. It's, I mean, okay. It's not. It's the same, just tweaked.
Okay. If you need any life advice, if you have any Cardinal needs, if you want to talk some Blues Stanley Cup Championship hockey, we want to hear from you on the Sports Six Pack. Get your text into the Hot Shots text line, 65780. Your questions are next on 101 ESPN. We do appreciate your text to the Hot Shots text line at 65780. And with your questions for us, here is Big Sizz.
Guys, what is the most frustrated you've ever been
right now?
Just now, when Randy tried to throw something into the garbage can and he missed.
Off the rim.
That's littering.
He does that.
Would have been a four-pointer.
Littering and.
Okay, what's the most frustrated?
Yeah, I wasn't listening.
Most frustrated you've ever been with the St. Louis Cardinals?
For me, it was when they essentially said that they were going to do everything they could in 93 to get that one bat, and everybody knew that bat was Bobby Bonilla, and then their general manager went on the air and said, we really don't care what the fans think. That's probably the most frustrated I've been.
Well, I honestly think it's now. That what you're talking about is very frustrating, but I believe I was at an age where I didn't get that mad about it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't start to get angry about sports until I got older. So I was still, what, I think 14 at the time that happened? Okay. Or 13?
And the reason that was frustrating was because you want an ownership that didn't care. That was an ownership
right.
that legitimately did not care. You had yep. an owner who said, there's no baseball player that's going to be making more than me. So, didn't say that publicly, said it privately. And you had a really good team that was disassembled because they didn't want to keep high-priced players around. So that they let Coleman go. They let Pendleton go. He goes and wins an MVP. They traded Willie McGee. They let Ken Daly go. It was criminal that they and that all caused Whitey Herzog to retire because Anheuser-Busch, after the death of Gussie Bush, bailed on the franchise. That was frustrating.
Which was a pretty bad time, and I would yeah. agree with that. I think, just for me personally, I think it's right now in the stretch of a year and a half of not doing as much at the during the offseason as I wish they would, and they had an opportunity last offseason. Look, and I've said this before, Paul Goldschmidt was an excellent acquisition, and I will never fault them for that. But the way I looked at the team was not, did you make one big move in the offseason? It was, how much work did you do to catch up with everybody else? Mm-hmm. And there was still a pretty good player out there. Cost a lot of money, but I think he would have been a stalwart for you for 10 years, playing third base or shortstop, whatever. And they didn't do that. And then you follow it up with this trade deadline, and you don't do anything to help the team when you said, we see ourselves making a move at the deadline to help this team, especially if they play well. They played well. You didn't do anything. This is a pretty frustrating stretch of baseball. Granted, it's not nearly as bad as what you're talking about. I didn't get as angry at stuff like that back then.
I totally get that.
Yeah.
Don't really appreciate this question. Meat has been a Jayhawk fan since birth. How old was the rest of the Fastlane when you learned the University of Kansas actually had a football team?
When that fat guy was the coach.
Me too.
That was like, yeah.
Mark Mangino, right? Yeah.
45.
Big boy.
No, it was, I think it was a guy named Tony Sands. Let me make sure I have that name right. I think a guy named Tony Sands ran for like 383 against the Tigers against a Bob Stull team. I think it was Tony Sands. 65780, if you remember that. Let's see. Tony Sands, Kansas. You don't remember?
They had that Gale Sayers guy.
Yeah, Tony Sands.
He was pretty decent.
Yeah, he was good, but that was I knew him as a Chicago Bear. Yeah, Tony Sands. I think he ran for like 383 against the Tigers, something like that. I'll find it here, but that was definitely his name. So 396.
Dang, that's right.
Do you guys remember what Mark Mangino's nickname was?
Fatty.
It's a little too on the nose, man.
Oh, blueberry.
Kind of. Bear. As in bear. Like a bear, Berry. Like a grizzly bear.
Oh, I thought he was like did you ever see Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory? The little girl that
yeah.
turned into the blueberry? I thought he was like one of those, but in real life.
No.
They had a person that would walk around and carry his headset, like the dock that his headset goes in,
yeah.
because it wouldn't hook onto his belt.
Yep, that's right.
That's so funny.
With all due respect.
Yeah, hey, nothing wrong. I mean, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
He has, to his credit, lost a significant amount of weight and,
good for him.
And several jobs.
And if you're fat, you can make fun of other fat people, right?
Yes, you
so
can.
So I'm in the clear. Cool. Question number three here. So no stupid questions, just stupid people. That's what our six-pack intro says. How stupid is Antonio Brown right now?
Did he get guaranteed money when they made that deal? He might not be that stupid. Sounds to me like a guy that really doesn't want to play football and forced the trade, maybe got himself some guaranteed money and will perhaps never play a down for the Raiders. Now, he'll have to give some of that money back, but
yes,
not all of it.
I'm trying trying to look and see what is.
So Schefter said after the deal was done with the Raiders, I said there was no guaranteed money.
No new guaranteed
money.
There's
now $30.1 million guaranteed. So no, there was no guaranteed before with the Steelers, now $30 million guaranteed.
So there's no guaranteed money if you don't play, though.
Yes, there is.
No,
because the team
signing bonus.
Yeah, the team will have to actually file a grievance, and it'll go through a process. And if he never plays for them, there's a and he can. It depends on what he does. For example, the Lions had to go into a grievance proceeding against Barry Sanders because they wanted all of his guaranteed money back. They didn't get it all back. He still got to keep a large portion of that.
He retired.
Well, that's what Brown's talking about doing.
He's full of crap. But okay, so the signing bonus, which is it's a total of $1 million over 3 years for him, so $333,000 each year. He gets all that, right?
Yep.
It's only $1 million, but it's still $1 million.
Yeah, he'll wind up playing. Come on,
he's full of crap.
Yeah,
he's gonna play.
He doesn't like training camp.
Do you think? All right. Do you think he intentionally went into that cryo machine and froze his feet so he didn't have to play?
No, I don't think anybody would be that stupid.
So then he's.
I think he's just stupid, but not that stupid that he would. That would be the thing. All he has to do is say he's got a tight hamstring. You don't have to freeze your feet.
That's true. Well, they can do an MRI on your hamstring and see if it's inflamed.
But if you say it's tight, it's tight.
Hmm.
If the Cardinals go under 500 during this run against bad teams, is the season likely lost? And how bad does that look at that point?
That would be bad.
Yep.
The Cardinals, was 2008 their last? Or 2007, their last under 500 season. That would not be good to have a under 500 season with this franchise. Mozeliak has never had a losing season, I know. So maybe 2007 was their last losing season. Fire Army. Hashtag Fire Army.
Well, why would you? He just won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, you don't want to fire him
what
now.
What a difference four months makes, huh?
I know. If only this Cardinals team was that Blues team.
I know.
That made a huge move in the middle of the season.
The Cardinals lost more games than they won was 2007. Since then, Mozeliak's teams have had a winning over 500 record every single year.
How much of this Cardinals buffoonery, according to the texter from the 314, is front office pride, the whole "we believe in our guys" BS? The texter says, unfortunately, the Cardinals play terrible teams in the next month, and the coaches and front office will be able to say, "I told you so."
Well, you can only play who's on your schedule. And there is absolutely a great amount of pride in the Cardinals. But keep in mind that when the Cardinals made the move to promote John Mozeliak and move Gersh to GM, one of the things that Bill DeWitt said was, I always ask our front office, what's our competitive advantage? And he said, we've lost that, and we have to find a new competitive advantage. And don't dismiss the fact, and it is a fact, that the Cardinals have moved their analytics department. They farmed it out to Worldwide Technology because clearly they think somebody is smarter and is capable of doing a better job than they are.
You just say, well, you have to hope something helps here because most teams in baseball are getting better in their analytics department. And you could have made the case a decade ago the Cardinals were as good, if not better, than anybody else.
The best, yeah.
I was listening to Buster Olney today talk about the Yankees and Luke Voit.
Mm-hmm.
And they said their analytics department were the ones that pushed for him to be involved in that trade because they said there's something, we see something here. We see something in here that we think is sustainable, so we need to go get that. Whereas I don't know if the Cardinals felt the exact same way about him. I think, and that's just an example. You know, you can be wrong sometimes on
that. They felt that way about Gallegos.
Who's the Cardinals?
Yeah.
And they felt that way about Michaelis, too.
Right.
Which has turned out pretty well.
Yeah. So.
But the bottom line is other teams are catching up to them. They're not by themselves any longer.
And have passed them, no doubt about it.
So put yourself into Antonio Brown's shoes right now. Not with the
oh man, my feet
not a foot issue. It's,
oh,
sorry guys, not so literal. If you were going to refuse to come to work, besides a raise, besides more money, what would you demand?
Right now, this job?
Yeah.
So I'm going to hold out, essentially. What am I going to hold out for?
Can I give you mine?
Yep.
I got two.
Okay.
Ice cream machine for the office. Soft serve ice cream.
Nice.
And good. I want the chocolate, the vanilla, and the twist with cones. Or a slide that we could take from our office down to the parking lot to go home.
It's one flight.
Wouldn't it be fun? You could go home happy.
My recommendation is don't hold out. I think I would go with a balcony outside the studio.
Oh, we could have barbecues.
So like during breaks, you could just
go outside. Yeah. And on nice days, yeah, have and broadcast out there.
And eat our ice cream cones.
Yep.
We do have a beautiful parking lot that we can look at.
Yeah.
Nice view. You know what? I don't need anything. I am more than satisfied.
So several years ago.
Suck up.
And here's why I am more than satisfied. Several years ago, my contract was coming up, and I went into our general manager's office, John Kioski, and I said, you know, I've got a negotiation coming up. And he said, yep. And I said, can you make sure that one thing I get in that negotiation is a parking spot? And he said, you don't have a parking spot? I said, no, I've never had a parking spot. He said, well, I'll take care of that right now. And in literally 5 minutes, he took care of it. And I've had a parking spot ever since.
Oh.
So that's one of the reasons that I didn't even have to threaten to hold out. So I was wondering what I would hold out for. Balcony and ice cream machine.
Well,
thanks.
I'm really proud of you, Randy. You
thanks.
Got a parking space.
I'm thrilled with it, except when people park in it.
Jerks.
You know what?
Yep.
I want a driver. I don't want to drive to work anymore.
That's
I want somebody
call.
To pick me up.
There you go, Costas. There you go. Good play.
That's it. That's what I want.
Thanks, Big Sis.
Thank you.
And thanks for your text to the Hot Shots text line 65780. Next up, from the Raiders on Hard Knocks to the Bears trying to find a kicker, we'll hit it all with the professor, John Clayton, talking NFL next on 101 ESPN. All right, NFL preseason is in full swing now, and we head to the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line. Our friend, the professor, John Clayton, is with us on 101 ESPN. How are you?
Good. Are you enjoying flag football with all the penalties?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Let's start with this, though. Has any individual impressed you so far over the course of, especially last night? Did anything stick out to you?
I mean, Kyler Murray got off to a good start. Now, the problem is that so many starters, more than ever before, weren't out there. I mean, there was 31 players from Jacksonville, including about maybe 15 starters not out there. You really didn't have, I mean, there's maybe only a lot of the young quarterbacks were out there for about a quarter. Some of the veterans, a handful of them, were out there for about one play. But, it's hard to really catch in the 22 teams that played yesterday anything that really stuck out because, again, they didn't stick their main players out.
No, there is one guy. We were talking about this guy a little bit during one of the breaks here, and that is Damon Sheehy Giuseppe, who was trying to make the Browns as a kick returner, I think is what he wants, or maybe to even be a receiver. And I do believe he's a long shot. He's got a really great story. Somebody who was sleeping outside a facility because he didn't have any money. He wasn't even supposed to be at camp. And he talked his way into camp and then he ran back a touchdown last night. So what are the odds he makes a team?
Not good. I mean, it's nice because what you'll see, and this happens so much in the preseason, is that you get so many guys that have a chance to do something, and they look good, and they lead the, running backs who lead the preseason in rushing, and a lot of them just don't make it. But again, because you think about where the Browns are, I mean, they should have enough returners because they've been trying to build that now for the last couple of years. And so, it's a long shot for him to make it because, does he really have a position? I mean, it's nice to be able to do it as a returner, but is there a position for him?
John, what the heck is going on with Antonio Brown here?
Hard to say. I mean, this to me continues to show why Pittsburgh is probably celebrating the idea that, he's no longer there because it's like, it's just crazy to think all the stuff that is going on. I mean, first off, now what happens is that he wants his helmet, okay? So the league's not going to let him do it. So now he's threatening to hold out the entire season until he gets all this stuff. And it's like, are you kidding me? I mean, just miss the whole season and retire because they won't let him let a helmet that's now outdated, not safe, and all that. And so he's got the problem with his feet because, I mean, name me how many people get the, you know, some kind of frostbite in the middle of the summer. That's kind of unusual. So it's just bizarre what's going on.
So if he does, and this is just hypothetical because eventually he's going to cave. I'm pretty sure we all know that. But if he weren't, if he were just to say, nope, that's it, I'm not playing, forget it, you're not going to give me what I want, how much money does he get to keep?
Virtually none. He's going to have to give it all back. I mean, you can't even say that he did much in the – I guess if there's a workout bonus, he'll be able to keep the workout bonus. But if he just decides to retire, I mean, he's got to give back what will be eventually $35 million in guarantee and $17 million a year. So this is a big payday that he's threatened to do. So I don't think anybody believes he is going to miss any time. But, again, just very bizarre to see what he's trying to think of and what he's trying to do.
John, what happens with the Philadelphia Eagles with the Nate Sudfeld injury? Their backup quarterback suffering a broken wrist last night and apparently will miss about 6 weeks.
Yeah, they've got to go find another backup quarterback someplace else because I don't think there's enough good enough on the roster unless you really want to go with Cody Kessler as the backup quarterback. I mean, they've, you know, going in with Carson Wentz, who's had injury problems. I mean, you like to have as good of a backup quarterback as possible. So, you know, today they made a trade because they've got linebacker issues too. So today, just moments ago, they made a trade for Eli Harold, the former 49er who's with the Buffalo Bills. So he'll be one of the linebackers. Now my guess is they're going to probably make some kind of a trade for a backup quarterback. You know, I'm kind of wondering, you know, do they call San Francisco to see if they can get C.J. Beathard, or maybe they can get you know, one of the guys there. I know I was at the Denver-Seattle game, and I guess maybe there's a chance they can call for Kevin Hogan to get that. But at least for temporarily, they've got to get a backup quarterback.
It was an amusing evening in Chicago last night as they try to figure out who their kicker is going to be. Eddie Pinheiro missed a 48-yarder and got booed in a preseason game. And then in that very same preseason game, you had Elliott Fry make one from 43, and he got a standing ovation. How do you think that situation is going to end up working out for the Bears?
Not well, because it really hasn't. They now are paying for the mistake of letting Robbie Gould go out to San Francisco, you know, not bringing him back, because Robbie was one that, you know, real good kicker, franchise kicker, ended up getting a big deal with the 49ers. And so now, you know, Cody Parkey, who they thought they did well, they gave him a $4 million contract extension, and Cody Doink Doink, as I call him, you know, bounced 10 off the sides and off the uprights and all those different things. And so they just are struggling to be able to do it. And this could be one of their downfalls because, I mean, I know, for example, you watched Seattle a couple years ago when they had the Blair Walsh experience, and the Blair Walsh experience cost them 3 games because he missed five times in 3 games that they lost. He missed game field goals that could have won them or tied the game. And so it's got to be a big concern because, you know, every time they have any kind of a kickoff like this, it's just not working out.
John Clayton is with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Patrick Mahomes, the league MVP last year, is actually going to play in the preseason. Andy Reid's going to play him tomorrow night. He says a quarter. It really is interesting how the league has changed and how many premier players, as you mentioned earlier, never see the field during preseason.
It really is. I mean, and you can see it's evolving to a point now where there's only, for the veterans and the starters and that, 2 meaningful games, and that's changing rapidly by the young coaches that are coming into the league or the new offensive coaches. I mean, you know, you can see that Sean McVay made a statement last year when he decided, I'm not going to play any of my starters, and so, you know, he went through the whole preseason, and guess what? He went to the Super Bowl. That worked out. He just had to have, you know, better practices at his facility, you know, have a couple scrimmages, and it worked out very well. Doug Peterson's doing some of the similar things, you know, because now I think last year he was down to have 69 snaps or something like that for the offense or for the overall and the starters. And so that's that trend right now. So more quarterbacks now are sitting out the first game, the fourth game, and just playing in 2 and 3. And what you can see is some of the young quarterbacks that are still in their rookie contracts, you know, they get maybe a quarter or maybe 3 series. For the vet, anything over 4 years, they're getting nothing.
It'd be really difficult for Pat Mahomes to be as good as he was last year. Usually you see a little bit of regression in that second year. How much of that do you think is really going to happen?
Well, I mean, so far, based on history, I mean, you've had, maybe three quarterbacks, all Hall of Famers, that had 50 touchdown seasons, and they came back and in the 30s, and you figure that'd be something that's going to be very similar to this, to what's going to happen to Mahomes. And, you know, you look at Mahomes, he's, you know, the best young quarterback we've seen in a long time, and, you know, maybe down the line can be a Hall of Fame quarterback. You figure at some point he's going to get one or two trips to the Super Bowl, but you know, they've got a lot of weapons. Maybe he can get over 40 touchdown passes, but there's got to be a little bit of a drop off. I mean, it's just the case. But how much of a drop off? Who knows? All I know is Mahomes is really, really good.
John, a couple of things about the Dallas Cowboys. Number one, the St. Louis and Ezekiel Elliott. Is this something that we're talking about players basically not participating during camp? Is this something that if it gets settled, it's going to be before the first game, or do you think it'll go into the season?
You would have to hope it gets done before the season, because say what you want, you know, as good as Dak Prescott is, and you know he's going to get a $30-plus million contract, he needs Ezekiel Elliott and he needs the running back. I know that when I did it, just did a story this week for the Washington Post, and what I basically said is that you know, a top seven quarterback is not going to have a losing season if his defense gives up less than 23 and he has a running game, because you look at eight instances since the 2008, and if you gave up 25 or more points, or if you gave up, or if you didn't have a running game, you end up having a losing season. Well, Dak would have a losing season without Ezekiel Elliott, so it makes it tough, but Jerry Jones has a way to find a way to sign him.
And then the other thing is a guy we know well, Robert Quinn, who broke his hand. He was going to miss the rest of camp, and then he gets suspended for a couple of games. And when the Rams drafted him, he had fallen in the draft because of those brain issues and the seizures that were brought up by his agent slash attorney. Why did the league deem him suspendable?
Well, because he, and again, this is the thing without the FDA testing. You just don't know what's in the stuff that you're taking. I mean, there was, it looked like a masking agent. And again, he wasn't trying to mask anything. He was trying to at least get stuff that he thought was going to be okay. But like we've seen with Lane Johnson, we've seen with other players. I mean, you know, Robert Mathis, of course, same thing. We know he was taking the fertility drug, same thing as Golden Tate. It's what, if it's in your system, you have to pay the price. And so right now, because it was a masking agent and he wasn't trying to mask anything, intent means nothing. The test means everything.
We all know that preseason results don't mean anything for the regular season, but it does not mean it is unimportant for teams. Who are the teams that this particular preseason is most important for this year?
I'd say, you know, you need to start to see what's going on in some of the bad teams. I mean, you know, the Jets need to do some things with Sam Darnold. Buffalo needs to do something with their offense. New York, then you go back and you look at the, you know, Tampa Bay. They need improvement with the New York Giants. The teams that were losing really have to improve.
John Clayton, always great to have you with us. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you next Friday.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you, sir. That's the great John Clayton on 101 ESPN. Coming up, monkeys, Wayne Newton, and a court of law. That's all next before With All Due Respect on 101 ESPN.